Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome to the New Books in Genocide Studies, a channel in the New Books Network. My name is Yakir Englander, your host. Today, I will speak with Yochai Ataria, the author of Primo Levi and Katzetnik, The Map and the Territory, published in Hebrew by the Pardes Publication House and in English by Springer. In his book, Yochai is asking how we can talk about trauma, and more specifically, how Holocaust survivors can witness and share about the events happening to them during the war. The dialogue between Yochai was unique to me. Both of us carry military trauma from our service, and we both dedicate ourselves to learning how we can support people with trauma to share their narratives, but also how can we live next to people who carry trauma. In his book and the interview, Yochai speaks about the roles of the Jewish Passover night and the stories of the binding of Isaac, but also of Ishmael in Genesis, as tools to share the Jewish trauma. We speak about the Eichmann trial and the unique testimonials of Katzetnik in it, and the question if Katzetnik spoke about himself or also about his role to share the stories of the people who did not survive. We speak about the gray zone and the complexity between being the victim and or also the victimizer. This interview, as others I offer you, is an invitation to listen to people from Israel and Palestine, people who are living the conflict and use their lives to touch it in different ways and to reflect on how we can heal the conflict. It is my wish to give you the gift not to speak about the conflict, but to meet people from it. Yochai Ataria, our host today, is an associate professor at the Tel Chai College. He is the author of Body Dishonorship in Complex Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder from 2018 and the Structural Trauma of Western Culture from 2017. He also co-edited the book Schema and Body Image, Jeanne Marie, Beyond the Mind's Limit, and the Interdisciplinary Handbook of Culture and Trauma. Yochai, hello, and thank you so much for coming to the New Books Network.
Hey.
Yochai, I want to speak with you about the book of how we write about the Holocaust and questions around death. And we're going to focus on Katzetnik, and we're going to focus about Primo Levi, and very soon I will ask you to say a few words about them. But I want to ask maybe a more general question. We say in the Passover, the Jews say in the Passover night, they said that we need to remember. And yeah, in each generation, right, we tell a story. This is what we do on the Passover night.
Yeah.
And now there is, as the less people, the less survivors of the Holocaust that are separating from us, are dying, come the question, what should we remember? And they tell us, this is your role to remember. And your book asks a question, how do you remember? And what do you remember? Can we trust the memories? I wonder, Yochai, how did you come to this, write this book?
So in a way, I arrived exactly from your story about Pesach. So in a way, I always ask myself, during Pesach, why are we so dedicated to tell the story of the Jewish trauma, in a way, the Jew trauma? So in a way, my question is actually, how is it, if it is possible in a way to avoid the big stories of Pesach and actually to listen to the real stories. And I've been in Yad Vashem a few times, and I heard over and again testimonies, and I always felt as if it's not really a testimonies. It's like a cooked story which we can hear, or which, in a word, there is like a way we are expect to hear some kind of traumatic story, and the result that all the stories felt very seems or feels as if they are alike. And for me to remember is first of all to listen to the words, to the stories, and in a way also to find a way to listen to the unsaid, in a way to the things which left aside, to the black holes, to the lacunas within the books, and memory, we should all remember, is not like a fixed thing, but is an ongoing process. So for me to remember is also to experience once again everything. So as so in my reading, I think that to read is to remember in a way.
I love it. So in a way, the only way to come closer to understand the slavery of the Jews in Egypt is to choose to read the Passover Haggadah and to try to listen to something there that beyond the words. You know, I think, Yochai, there is a part in the Haggadah, in the Passover Haggadah, that there is debate between the rabbis in the Talmud how much God punished back the Egyptians. And I never understood it, right? I mean, one rabbi said, yeah, in Egypt, they got the 10 plagues, but after that, on the sea, they got more. And then the rabbi said, no, in Egypt, when they were suffering, actually each one is like double four, double five. It's like when someone wants to say something and they fail to say it. And yeah. And I feel maybe, is it true also about the memories of the Holocaust? Like we listen to, but okay, we also fail to listen.
In a way, so I think in a way you were now very, very accurate. I'm a bit surprised by, it's not I've been surprised by you, but I'm being surprised about myself now. So in a way, the reason I think Primo Levi suicide in the end, made suicide or whatever, is inability to break the Haggadah. So in a way, we are as listener in many cases try to create an Haggadah from the Holocaust, from the story, instead of just listen. And simply the stories are simple, sometimes they are very difficult, but we always prefer the Haggadah. And Katzetnik is maybe the most, like in Eichmann trial, in Eichmann trial, it's well known he fainted. So in a way, this is the Haggadah in the biggest one.
Yeah.
And he was unable to write. Yeah, he's unable to. He wrote after it, but really, it was like a minor writing, but he was unable to write, almost for decades because he was locked within the Haggadah. In a way, Primo Levi is once again an example of we are unable to read Primo Levi. We want Primo Levi to be the nice guy, the optimist guy, the ironic survivor who has the ability to laugh, and we are unable to read that Primo Levi has a dark side all the way through and through. On the other end, we are unable to see that in Kazetnik there is a very complicated side, which is not simply to faint, but also to tell a very complicated story. For example, in his last book, Kazetnik, in a way, exposed his very, very deep identification with the Nazis. He asked over and again if I could be in that position, and the answer is over once and again, yes, I could. And in a way, this is against the Haggadah in a way. And for me, in a way, this book is a project which try to re-listen everything and to reread. In a way, there is also a very important story of Jorge Sampun, who is a Spanish. He was in Buchenwald, and he has this discussion with his friend in Buchenwald. How should this story should be told in a way? It should it be like pure reality? Should it be like imagine? Like should we use imagination? Should we lie in a way? And as I see, there are so many ways to tell these stories, and to remember is to allow all these stories to emerge in a way.
Well, Yochai, I want to take what you just said, and to it's like, this is the introduction. Now I want to go deep into your book, because it's exactly from there. I want, and before I will ask you specific questions, I just want to put aspiration for this dialogue. First of all, I can't tell you how much I love your book. Thank you so much, Yochai. And I want to put two questions that will be there. One is, what does it mean to witness and to share? To be a witness and to share. This is like a meta question in your book.
Yeah.
And a question that maybe you don't ask in the book, but I want to ask you, because I know that this book is like questions that you are dealing with. Not only how do we read people with trauma, or we listen, as you said, but a question that will be there as a meta question is, how do we live with people who has trauma? Okay, because I think it's a question that we're asking today in so many areas, you know, like in Israel, many of us, and of course the Palestinians, are living trauma. And then the question is not only how do we listen to each other, but what are the options to have dignity life with each other?
Yeah.
And questions sexual trauma, et cetera, et cetera. So these are two questions that I would love to learn from you. So now let's dig into the book. Let's start with Kazetnik. Oh yeah, please.
Actually, I want to begin with the second question, because in a way it's going back to the Haggadah. So once again, as in Israel, as I feel, as I see it, as I feel things, the biggest story is the story of the Haggadah. So is the on the one
binding.
Side the
Haggadah is the binding of Isaac.
Yeah, the binding of Isaac. So on the one hand there is Ishmael, and the other hand there is the binding of Yitzhak, but there is also the binding of Ishmael, and there is also a very, very hard story over there with God and Sarah and the laugh and the laughter, and the name of it's of Yitzhak, which is laughter in a way. It's exactly to laugh. And in a way, you can say that my end goal is once again to break this Haggadah and to listen to Ishmael, because Ishmael also been, in a way, he was kicked out, and also to listen
to the desert. Twice.
And Yitzhak also went to he was bending, but in a way, he was do it in a way with a lot of. In a passion, you know, he took everything on his back, and in a way, for me, it's all going back once again to the biggest story of this place, and once again, in order to solve the problems, we need to re-listen, to re-learn, to learn how to listen to stories. And it takes me once again to the first question. So for me, I was involved in a study with survivors of trauma, but of sexual trauma. And the most important finding in this study was that if you simply listen, if the survivor is talking and you just listen and believe, almost all the problem dissolved by immediately. Like it's taken a few weeks, but the fact that you listen and the fact that you believe. So for me, the first law is to listen and to believe, even if it's sound impossible. And in many cases, it sounds impossible, but it's the truth, or at the very least, this is the truth in terms of the subjective experience. I think I answered both questions. I'm not sure,
yes,
but maybe.
Yes, for sure. And I think this is a question that I would like us to walk with during. So let's go to Katsetnik.
Yeah.
Not that I don't want to do the Wikipedia, but just like a few words that will lead us to the question that I'm interested, which is, yeah, what Katsetnik try to tell us, right? So a few words about Katsetnik.
Yeah, so in a way, the problem with Katsetnik is that we are unable to do Wikipedia on Katsetnik, because I'm also editing a new book about Katsetnik, and there is all the time new amazing findings and new secrets all the time, new secrets and new truths and new lies. And so, and in a way, for me, Katsetnik is a story about a survivor. So in order to survive the Holocaust, you always had your own secrets.
Why?
Okay, so I've been in Germany and I gave a talk about Katsetnik, and I felt ashamed after the talk, and I told myself, why do you give them all these excuses? But in a way, I think it's been long enough in order to, and it's quite clear that in order to survive, you need to do something. It's not like a clean story in the end of the day. I think Primo Levi was so smart, and he put it in such a intelligent, in such a beautiful way in his last book, before the suicide. So he told us the truth. In order to survive, you must to put your hand in a way, you must to betray yourself in a way, and you must redefine the very notion of being a human being. So in both Katsetnik and Primo Levi, in this sense, tell us the same story. It's not as if you are, well, it's so complicated now to talk about it, because it's been a while.
And
once again, I want to be careful here, and all the time, as Levi says all the time, you need to put a very strong wall between the survivors and the people who actually did the trauma, the Nazi. But that being said, the wall is not a real wall. It's a thin line which everybody cross all the time. Okay, so I remember there is the survivors, and on the other hand, and they are the one who did everything, and they are and everybody needs to remember it. But that being said, once again, we need to understand that the survivors cross the line all the time. So and it takes us also to how actually we need to listen to his story, because Primo Levi is saying over and again, it's very difficult to believe to the story of the ones for example, there is the Sonderkommando and the Kapos, and it's very hard to believe their stories in a way.
Right.
But everybody crossed the line, and we need to be able to listen to these gray areas of the line. So to go back to Katsetnik, yeah. Katsetnik is in a way, he born in Poland, and he was sent to Auschwitz, but actually he has this amazing story which we, in 43, he was actually sent to Auschwitz, but went back and then sent once again, and it's quite rare story, and we discover.
And Yochai, his name is not Kotzetnik.
Yeah.
I mean, so this is the nickname.
But it's not even, yeah. So this is once again complicated. But there, Yechiel Feiner is the original name of the person who born in Poland in 1909. But Kotzetnik said over and again, I was died and born once again as Kotzetnik in 43 once I entered Auschwitz. But once again, there is another name of Kotzetnik, which is Yechiel Dinur in Israel. And there is like another four or five names. And there is also the story, there is also Hari from the book. So this is actually, for me, Kotzetnik is like the ultimate example of the survivor who is so split between so many characters. And you can say, so yeah, he's lying, but you can say, yeah, it's all truth actually. In order to survive, you need to develop many kind of characters. And Kotzetnik, in a way, in his writing, exposed this difficulties and these characters. So he been in Auschwitz, but actually he was, so it's once again, it's he was in quite I don't know how it's gonna be on it was it, he's actually was in an easy camp, if you want.
Yeah, you say it with quotation, of course.
Yeah, quotation. It was like in Auschwitz, but in a very it's a bit far away from the center, and it was actually in a place was with good conditions in a way. Yeah, I'm joking.
Of course.
But so amazingly, Kotzetnik wrote his book in the end of 45. It's called Salamandra, and it was the first stories. It was the first book and the first story which the Tzabar, the Israeli Tzabar. How do you say Tzabar? It's Tzabar?
Tzabar or the Israeli, what we call the native, who were born already in Palestine.
It's a bit joke to say native in Israel, but yeah.
It's so complicated. It's yeah. So complicated.
So the so-called native Israeli read.
Yes.
Yeah. And in a way, Israel, the natives of Israel learn about Auschwitz from those quite crazy books, which involve porno almost, and on the one hand, but on the other hand, the books we know that the books are very accurate when it comes to history, if we think about the history side, the dates of the date and everything are very accurate, but the story themselves are sometimes very accurate, but sometimes they are quite crazy. But if we return to your question, so for me it's all truth. It's not truth about fact, but it's truth about what is it like to be a survivor.
And I think what you said now, it's like I'm breathing heavily because what you say, it's so truth in a way. Because you have here a question of what does it mean as a person with trauma to tell the story, right? So as you mentioned, in Israel at the 50s, when the stories come slowly, I mean, no one wants to listen to them, but when the Israelis who are born in Palestine and then in Israel, they are hearing screaming at night, right? In the middle of the kibbutz.
Yeah.
They see sometimes weirdos like mumbling to themselves on the street.
Yeah.
And
they see the number on the hand all the time.
They see the number on the hand, right?
Yeah.
And somehow they need to figure it out what the hell happened. And then come the
I'm not sure they want to actually know what the hell.
Yeah, exactly. And they don't want to know what happened. Thank you so much, Yochai. But they are forced to see the numbers and to hear the screaming in the middle of the night from some houses.
Yeah.
And then come the Eichmann trial.
Exactly.
And it's a real trial. Someone is going maybe to die, which is Eichmann. And then come Kotzetnik. How a judge should listen to what? Okay. What happened there?
So in a way, it is possible. We need to talk about this trial for like three different kind of meetings, but we need to put it in the context. But before the context, so in this trial, there are 102 witnesses, I think. I'm not sure. And up until 2 weeks ago, I was sure that Kacetnik met Eichmann. But there is a new finding in my studies that actually he didn't saw Eichmann.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a new finding. It's really exciting. As I told you, it's all full of secrets. This is really a new finding from a new study. But we need also to think about this trial in a big context of, and I want to mention two small stories.
Please.
The first one is Eichmann trial is a reaction to the story of Kastner, and we cannot Kastner. Avoid.
And to, sorry, we can, to the train of Kastner.
Yeah, and the trial.
And the trial of Kastner. Sorry,
we cannot avoid avoid thinking about this is the biggest big context of Ben Gurion want in a way to re-establish the memory of the Holocaust. But as I told you, for me to re-establish the memory of the Holocaust in a way is to stop listening in a way. And for me, the biggest context, like in the most, and it's going back to the Agada. So do you know there is the thing in Israel which in Israel has a nuclear weapon, as everybody don't know. And who and the German war, the actually they paid for the
Israel nuclear weapon.
And do you know when the first payment arrived?
I do not know.
Like a week after the death of Eichmann.
Wow.
Because there is agreement between Germany and Ben Gurion that when you talk about Eichmann, you can say that Eichmann is a Nazi, but you can never say that Eichmann is a German.
Mm.
So this is once again all the time throwing us once again to the biggest story, that the Agada and the trauma and the link between the Holocaust and the atomic weapon. This is my new book, by the way. Like it's all combined. So but if I'm going back to Kacetnik, so Kacetnik arrived to the stage after he didn't eat for 24 hours, and he thinks that he's going to be presented as Kacetnik.
Hmm.
Up until then, it's once again it's a bit a legend, but a bit true. There's two characters. There is Kacetnik and there is Yechiel Dinur. In a way, Yechiel Dinur doesn't know Kacetnik, and Kacetnik doesn't know Yechiel Dinur. In a way. And a few minutes before the trial, he's been told that he's going to be presented as Yechiel Dinur. And so on the stage in front of Eichmann, and the cameras, and it was a live broadcast, and it was, but this is a different story. He was forced to be presented first of all to himself as Yechiel Dinur. So so he's talking, and he's like in my classes, I'm showing the full witness. He's talking, and it's really he's starting to talk about stars and about Jesus, and you know, he's going very far away. But if you really listen to Kacetnik, you see that after 4 or 5 minutes, he stopped to talk. He's no longer talking in the third person, and suddenly he's standing and he's talking in first person, and wow. Suddenly he's over there. He
so
said,
he's Yechiel.
Seeing...
So he's now Yechiel.
He's, I don't know who is it. Actually, for me, he's like, for me, is in an empty box. He could be a lot of people, but he returned to Auschwitz and he see everybody going to the, he's like to the chambers. And he say, in the first, he say, I saw them. But after a few minutes, he's saying, I'm seeing them.
Mm.
I'm now over. And in a way, he like moved from 61, from Israel to Auschwitz to 44, 45. And in this moment, exactly, the trial stops him. And for me, this is the most crucial, this is the most important moment in the way Israel, in a way Israel unable to really listen to the witnesses, because this was the first time, and as I see it, also the last time, that we saw a witness, a real witness. Like, for me, a real witness is... to witness is actually to move back and forth between the here and now and the back then. And he just shifted. He began as Yechiel Dinur, and he shifted to Kacetnik or to Yechiel Feiner or whatever. And in the moment he was there, the trial, he forced to stop in a way. And then if
Yochai, do you know why he was forced to stop? Like historically, because it sounds for them not testimonial anymore.
Yeah, it is possible to say that in a way, all the way through and through, it was not a testimony. But today, I can say, from my perspective, it was a very strong testimony all the way through, because if you listen to the testimony, he was in the beginning, he's very far away, and he's talking like a robot, each and every second he's become more emotional and going more to the past, and then once he arrived to the lacuna, to the black hole, he's being forced to stop talking. And amazingly, the camera is moving from him. The camera is moving, and then he faints. And so, as I see it, I'm deeply influenced by Shoshana Feldman, unable to be heard, he decided, it's all unconsciously, of course, to deliver the story in the only way he could, by through his body. And after the trial, he was actually in hospital for a few months, completely dissociated, like his half body was paralyzed in a way.
Wow.
So he'd been accused that it was like it was an acting or something, but it was, for me, it was truth, a pure truth in a way. And actually, for me, the biggest thing is our inability to listen to him, and our inability, and our in a way, Dan Meron and it, in Israel, you can see that in many cases he's being accused, and this is for me the real story of the Holocaust, that we are unable to listen to the survivors. We prefer to make them crazy or whatever, instead of just listen to the story and take the story as truth, even if it's not accurate in terms of the facts. But who cares about the facts? There is history, and there is to remember. So it is possible to study history and the facts, but in order to remember, we need to listen to the subjective experience, and we failed to do it. And for me, we failed to listen to the story of Yitzhak, and we are failing to hear Ishmael, and we are failing to hear Katzetik. And last comment, Primo Levi, in the end of his life, he was in ongoing a dialogue with the German reader. And all over and again, he says that the German reader is unable to actually listen to him. And there's a very important story for him I will stop in order for you to ask, and then I will turn to the story of Primo Levi.
I would love it, because it brings other questions that I want to, but I want to stay for a second with Katzetnik and what you share with us. Because first of all, I hear a distinction between history and memory, and trauma cannot be healed by history, in a way, by facts. Trauma needs to be heard differently than just the facts. Do I say it right?
Yeah. So I want to be very accurate here, because if I'm going with this notion all the way through and through, so this it explains why women are unable to tell the story in the police or in the trial, because it's not truth, it's just stories though. So there is also truth over there, and there are also facts. But if we really think about what does it mean to actually to listen, so it's not about facts. It's about allowing the silence and allowing the thing which are reject the very notion of language to find a way to be spoken in a way. It's not about fact, but it's not about words at all.
I want to add one more thing that I hear from you, because something that you said, and I hear it from sometimes in dialogue around somatic and trauma.
Yeah.
It's to the words are failing in some ways, and there is should be a place for the body and two memories of the body that demands a lot of silence in order to invite the body. But even more than that, and again, it's not my professional, so I want to be very sensitive. But this is one of the many reasons I just learned so much from your book, because you mention that there is a question around the distinction between the survivor and the people who did it. Let's say the Nazis in that case. And I think what sometimes we also hear in sexual trauma or other trauma, military trauma, is that the distinction between the person who got hurt and the person who hurt is dismissed. Like, for example, someone with sexual trauma as a child can desire in a way to go back and to involve sexuality and children. It doesn't mean again, they're going to act it, but it's there. And we need to learn to listen. And it's so painful because in a way it's like, what? But this is what happened to you. Yes, and it's so complicated. And I think you said that and in your book, it's just so powerful to see that the distinction between the survivors and the Nazis, according to the writers, to the survivors, is not black and white. There is a deep gray zone.
Once again, I need like a few hours in order to deal with your important comments. But let's say that the biggest, I'm going to talk about two issues. So first of all, in order to survive, in many cases during trauma, you need to be dissociated during the trauma. And cathartic is once again very strong example here. But once you are dissociated from your first person perspective, you're in a way, and you become completely empty, you can embrace a lot of perspectives. And some of them are of the one who, of the Nazi or whatever. Like it's only an example. And I think cathartic is only an example for this. But yes, this is what actually happened during the trauma. You need to survive, so you dissociated from the event, but the cost is heavily in the long term. And this is the reason there is a very strong relation between trauma, between dissociation during trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder, and even schizophrenia. I have a lot of writing about this issue. This is my PhD. So on the one hand, so this is a small comment about this issue, but you talk about the gray zone in a way. And the gray zone is a notion that emerges from Levy's writing. Levy, in a way, he's the most important voice. And on the other hand, there is the voice of Kazetnik, who is talking in terms of other planet. Like it's like a different world, and you cannot understand it. And it's very wait a minute. There is a lot of noise. Is it okay?
I don't hear. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So. So Primo Levi, in a way, he's talking about the gray zone, and about our ability to understand that there is a continuation between our reality, between this world and the other world, and Kazetnik is talking about a different world, and in a way, Kazetnik has been accused that by describe it as a different world, he actually allow us to say everybody, like in a way he allowed the German to say we are not in charge and we are not responsible because it is a different world, it's a different laws, but as Iris Miller show in a paper, actually Kazetnik is very well aware to the gray zone within the other planet. And in the end of his life, you can say that Kazetnik completely understood the gray zone. But I want to be here a bit more even radical and say that the gray zone is a nice theoretical notion. But once you leave the gray zone, as Primo Levi did, you can pay a heavy cost for that. Because to be in the gray zone, Primo Levi has a lot of dedicated writing in which he talks about his own guilties, which is very, very minor. They are really, they are so minor, it's almost a joke. But for him, it showed him that he could be one of these, that he's also in the gray zone. So it's nice to talk about the theoretical world as the gray zone, but once you are in there, it become very difficult to live with this truth. And in a way, for me to listen to the survivors is to allow them to go very deep to the gray zone and to talk what like to find a word for this thing which sometimes sounds impossible.
Yeah.
A thing which you find yourself doing in the gray zone, and I want to just to tell my own story for a moment.
Please.
So I've been in Shechem and Gaza and everywhere in my military.
Just for our listeners, our cities in Palestine and Nablus and
yeah. So I've been in those places, and I thought I was some kind of tzaddik or whatever.
Like the righteous soldier. Righteous.
Yeah, and in the night after capturing the so-called mechablim, terroristic, I don't know, it's very difficult to define them. I think the word terrorist is not fair, but never mind. So I said between the terrorist and my group of soldier in order like to block them, because sometimes it was a bit harsh, let's say it in a gentle word. And I was so sure I'm such a great person. But I've been in Jenin one time, and it was a day before I went home to vacation, and my wife actually, she's now my wife, but then she was my girlfriend, and she took the bus. And I knew that this terrorist is supposed to be on this bus. So once I saw him, I was like, for 2 minutes, I was completely in the gray zone. And like I completely understood that it's very easy to move over there between being sometimes more gentle, sometimes being to do things which you are ashamed in the years after. But so for me to listen to the story is to allow the witness to move within the gray zone.
Yeah.
And the gray zone is everything but Agada. It's a brute, you know, sometimes it's a brute truth. It's not nice one. But if we're talking once again about the big story, we talk about Agadah and Pesach and about Yitzhak, if we think about some kind of solution to the situation we are in now, we need to, in a way, to leave aside, in a way, the unrealistic stories which are cooked and to find a way to listen. And I think for my experience, in many cases, it's enough just to listen.
It's so powerful. It's very powerful. And again, Yochai, I'm thinking about our listeners. I think about how do we teach what happened in the Holocaust for the next generation who are not going like to see people with numbers. They're not going to, you know, they're not going to meet them even very soon. Yeah. Very soon.
Yeah.
And even the survivors who are still with us, they were kids. And to rely on trauma and kids, it's so complicated. Now, yeah. On the one hand, we're going to have more and more people who are going to say, you see, you read Katzetnik, it's clear that it's not clear reality. I don't know how to say that, you know, without...
It's not true.
Yeah, it's not true. And like this Holocaust memory, in a way, it's just not history. So let's stop learning that, right? And so there is this notion and the notion of how do we listen to trauma. And I think there is something in your book and the way how you give, I felt so much intimacy between you, Primo Levi, and Katzetnik. Yeah. And the way how you walk us with their text and you show us, listen to them now. Like I really felt invitation, Yochai, to go to a journey in your book.
And amazing world. Thank you.
Thank you. And to go to really complicated things, and maybe we need to end. So I want to end with one more question. And it's not going to be such a clear one, but I want you to share a few words. I go back to my meta question. So how do we live with people with trauma?
Yeah.
Primo Levi decided to commit suicide.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say that. When you commit suicide, there are people who are after that need to live with that.
Yeah.
And it's very traumatic for them.
Yeah.
And Katsetnik, I don't know what does it mean to live with Katsetnik, if it's possible.
No.
It's not possible. Yeah, it's not possible. And there is also both of them force you to listen to something that none of us want to listen to, which is the Muselman. This person who is like robotic, alive, already dead, who has no passion to life. No, you look at his eyes from what I read, you don't see life.
Yeah.
It's so complicated. How should we live with these traumatic events?
This is a big question. So in a way, first of all, I want to say that for me to listen to the witnesses is to allow them to fail in their witness. And everybody is in a way in the reason that Katsetnik is so strong as a writer, as I see it, is actually his failure. It is also true for Primo Levi. They are both failed to describe the inner world of the Muselman. So allow them to live with the failure. Well, your question is a very difficult one.
What do you take from the commit suicide of Primo Levi?
First of all, let's say that it's very difficult to explain it. And in my book, I'm dealing and I'm trying to compare between his suicide and Jeanne Marie, which is also I edited a book about Jeanne Marie, and I'm dealing quite a lot with Jeanne Marie. And it's not the same suicide. And each suicide has its own its own story. But let me just say that for me, Levi's suicide, it's not exactly about the Holocaust at all. It's a result, actually, of his translating of Kafka. And I remember my own experience after the Lebanon War, the second one, I returned my home and I read Kafka, like just Kafka, for like 2 or 3 months. It was a very difficult experience. And I think about Primo Levi's decision to translate Kafka, the trial, and he said it was a mistake, but like he will enter too much into this gray zone. Too deep into the gray zone, and for me, Primo Levi's suicide is more a result of understanding what does it actually mean to be a human being, and if I will attend to your question about how to live with them, in a way, survivors, in many cases, ashamed to be part of the human of this. They are ashamed to be humans because they saw how low it can get, and because they are also in the gray zone, they felt they are part of this. This shame or this guilty, so in a way, to allow them, to be with survivors, is to allow them and enable them to understand that, in a way, in crazy situation, you just do things, and there is no use to blame or to feel guilty afterwards. It's like, in crazy situation, you do crazy things in order to survive. And this is what it is.
I love it, Yochai. I think that this sentence, what you say, is so powerful, because maybe the responsibility of us in society is to make sure that we don't force people to go to gray zones.
Wow, yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it's so powerful what you said. I if it's okay, I want to stay with that.
Amazing, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. Wow, Yochai, I really appreciate, like, thank you for writing this book. It's a gift to anyone who want yeah. to yeah, I just felt that this book really helped me to listen to trauma and how to work with that with so much sensitivity. Thank you so much for being so sensitive with that.
Thank you. And the interview was very, very, yeah, and it forced me to really rethink everything from scratch. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Yochai. Bye-bye.
Bye.